Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Beyond the Trek Fireside Chat here. Got an awesome guest for somebody who we've been connecting with quite a while there, Mr. Andrew Kerr. So, Andrew, I'd like to go ahead and welcome you.
Hey, man, appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's been, I say this a lot to a lot of people, but it's so true. It has been a long time coming, and I think it is because we connect through social media and just through many different platforms that we try and schedule these things, and everyone's life kind of gets in the way. Kids, wife.
That's it.
Jim, so I'm super excited to talk about it today, and how we connected honestly was incredible too, because as our platform has continued to grow, it has really started to reach out to a lot of the veteran community.
For sure.
And I think that's how we got connected, was through Instagram, through a post that was relating to some Marines that I've gotten to know over time and gotten to see what you've been able to do with your gym, which I'm super excited to get into and talk about. So
that makes two of us, man.
Yeah. I mean, the last time we talked was, it had to be a couple months ago, right? I was out traveling. I gave you a phone call, and that had been a long time coming. And we finally got this scheduled. You were working at the gym now, same place you're at.
Yeah.
So it's been.
Yeah. It looked totally different. Wasn't done yet. Floors wasn't laid down, but everything's coming together now.
Heck yeah. Well, Without further ado here, I'm gonna go ahead and give you an intro here. So, just like I said, Mr. Andrew Kerr, a dedicated strength coach. Your mission: empowering athletes to reach new heights. So, you served in the Marine Corps from 2009 to 2013. With your background in military training and experience coaching Marines in challenging environments, you bring that unique blend of discipline and motivation to your strength coaching practice. And currently, right now, you're specializing in personalizing programs for high school and college athletes. You're focusing on strength and conditioning and nutrition guidance to drive performance and success. And the gym that you're currently operating with is out of Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
Great place to be. I know a lot of people that are moving there. I know the Tennessee area is continuing to grow and boom. So
yeah.
I'm sure it's just getting super busy.
Dude, the traffic is getting insane. Like, the more people that move here, I don't know if they haven't planned properly or what, but it's chaos on the roads. But I mean, Tennessee's a great place to live. I know why people want to move here.
Heck yeah. Well, hey, let's go ahead and, without further ado, man, let's dive into it. Kind of want to get your life story on it. Let's talk about how you grew up, what your service was like in the Marines, how you got into strength and conditioning, and then how you've been able to grow that and where you're at now and where you see it going.
For sure. So yeah, man, like starting off as a kid, you know, I grew up right here in East Tennessee. I was a 3-4 sport athlete pretty much my entire life. So I was always involved in athletics. But yeah, man, starting off, like, everybody goes through stuff. I feel like everybody, especially when they're younger, has stuff that kind of sticks out to them, you know, that kind of shape like who they are. And unfortunately, like, one of the first things I remember happening was my mom passing away when I was 10. That's one of those things that really stands out in my mind that kind of helped shape me. I have no problem talking about it. It was during the height of the OxyContin era when that stuff really first hit the market, you know? And she had a doctor who was one of these pushers, you know, that just tried to write the biggest prescriptions he could write. He actually went to prison not too long after my mom passed away because of how many prescriptions he was writing and stuff like that. So she dealt with like severe migraines her entire life, and he put her on OxyContin to help with her migraines, put her on too much. And unfortunately, she fell asleep at the wheel. And hit a telephone pole when I was about 10. And that's kind of one of the first things I remember. But what I remember about it was the love that people showed me after that happened. Like, I remember just a kind word here or there from different people really made a difference. And I've really taken that into my adult life. You never know what somebody's battling behind the scenes, you know? And sometimes just a kind word from you or somebody else can take that terrible day somebody's having and turn it into something great, you know? So that was like one of the first things I remember. That was around the time I was really getting into athletics and really getting into sports, you know? So every game I played, you know, I thought about my mom. It was just, I wanted to be as successful as I could be for her, you know, and everything. So that's kind of how everything got started as far as with my, you know, journey in athletics. That's kind of where the rocket ship took off, so to speak. So after that happened, my dad was a prison guard. So I moved in with him. He worked up at Brushy Mountain State Prison, which has been closed for a while now. But we had a relationship that it's gotten better over time. But like most kids and their dads, we really didn't see eye to eye. You know what I mean? When I was growing up, we grew up in vastly different surroundings, you know. So it was one of those things where we tried to see eye to eye, but it took me doing some growing up before I think we really started clicking like his father and son, you know. So I was raised by my father and my grandmother. Loved them both to death. My grandma passed away a few years ago, unfortunately, but they really raised me and brought me up to the person I am today.
What was that like on your dad after losing your mom and having to really lean into that? Did he try to fill both roles?
Or? I think he did. Yeah. And I think that's part of where the butting of heads took place, you know, like he tried to step in and be mother and father, you know, and in a kid's mind, you know, nobody's going to replace mom, you know what I mean? And it didn't matter, you know, as bad as it is to say, it didn't really matter how much he tried. I was kind of determined to be miserable. You know, when something like that happens, I just couldn't pull myself out of that hole for a very long time. You know what I mean? But I really respect my father for doing what he did and trying to step up in the way that he did, working long hours, still getting me to school, still came to every one of my games, always was up there cheering. You know, I never had to wonder if somebody was going to show up for me. And that's one of those things I'll forever be grateful for, because I played with a lot of different guys whose parents never showed up. You know, so having that support there really did mean something, even though it was a lot harder for me to say it, you know, than I wish it would have been.
Yeah. Looking back at that, did you have a realization of how hard he was working to be there?
Not until I was older.
Yeah. And when did that kind of hit you? And especially as you started and you look back at it.
I'd say 6 to 8 months after I joined the Marines, like 6 to 8 months after I started having real responsibility and started having to think about things that were bigger than myself. That was kind of when I had that realization of like, oh, my dad's been doing this for 10 years, you know, and not only was he doing it for 10 years, but he wasn't demanding that everybody see that he was doing it. He did it silently. You know what I mean? And that's what I feel like when somebody does something like that and they're silent about it, it's because they know it's the right thing to do. They're not doing it because they want people to look at them a certain way, you know?
Yeah. I know this is kind of getting ahead here, but how do you think that has shaped your relationship now as you've gotten older and look back at that and became an adult?
Yeah. A lot. So a few years ago, my father got diagnosed with cancer and me and my wife moved back to Seymour to be, you know, closer to him. And I remember when he told me about the diagnosis, in my mind, I was kind of like, okay, it's time for me to take care of you now. You know, like I had already had that realization, you know, previously that like, man, you know, he did all this and didn't really get a thank you for it. Like I was too young and dumb to realize what the effort that he was putting in. So he never really got a thank you for me until much later in life, you know? And as a father myself, I couldn't imagine having to fill both roles, you know, like I just so much respect for him, especially the older I get.
Yeah. So how did that continue as you were going through school? And then all the way through high school before you joined the Marines.
Yeah, so it's kind of a weird situation because we did butt heads a lot. And as I got older, the butting of heads kind of got worse. So when I was about 16, I actually moved in with my mother's parents up in Virginia. I was in a bad situation, as a lot of people that joined the military. I was not the clearest thinker when I was a child. Where my mom had passed away, I'm big like against bullying. I was bullied my whole life. after my mom passed away, there was kids that would poke and prod me about it because they knew it was going to get a rise out of me. You know, they knew it was going to bother me. So I got into a few fights I probably shouldn't have been in, got into some situations I probably shouldn't have been in. And at that point, when I moved in with my grandparents, it was kind of a two birds with one stone situation. Like, me and my father did butt heads, but I was also in these bad situations that the only way for me to really get out of was to physically remove myself from them. So I moved up to Giles County, Virginia, up with my grandparents. And as much as I love my dad, it was the best thing that could have happened because my grandfather was a Methodist minister. He just got my head on right. You know, a lot of talk about God, a lot of talk about faith and how we're supposed to behave as Christians. And he really opened my eyes to how I should carry myself as a man, you know, and then it wasn't until much later on when I had that realization, when I was in the Marines, that I was like, dude, this is what my dad was trying to tell me from the beginning. I just didn't want to hear it, you know?
So did you stay in Virginia until you graduated high school?
I did. Yeah.
And then, did you join the Marines right after that or?
Yeah. So I graduated in 2008. I enrolled in college for about 5 months, long enough to about fail every course I was in. And I just realized I didn't have the maturity. I didn't have the discipline. None of the things I needed to be a good student, I didn't have, you know. And again, joining the Marines was the best decision I've ever made in my life because of the discipline and the things that it gave me, the tools that it gave me to use throughout my life now.
What drew you to the Marines versus any other branch?
So, funny story, me and my buddy were going to go in together, and I was actually looking at the Army originally. I was in the Army recruiter's office talking to him one day, and the Marine, you know how all the recruiting offices are like right next to each other, you know, a lot of places it's in the same building. The Marine Corps recruiter comes over and they're just talking, you know, just back and forth, just kind of shooting the shit. And the Marine Corps recruiter looks at me on his way out and is like, yeah, you probably wouldn't make it anyways, and just left.
Yeah, I have heard that tactic used more than once.
Yeah. And it worked because, I mean, and I remember the Army recruiter. I can't remember his name, but I remember my recruiter was Staff Sergeant Brown in the Marines. And the Army recruiter looked at me and said, don't pay him any mind. He's just trying to get a rise out of you. I immediately left his office, went straight over to the Marine Corps recruiter's office and was like, what do you mean I wouldn't make it anyways? And at this point, I was about 140 pounds soaking wet. I was just a little guy. He was like, man, the Marines are just different. You know, the Marines are different. Not everybody's cut out to be in the, I'm sure you'll be great in the Army, but not everybody's cut out to be a Marine. Sign me up. The fact that you don't think I can do it, sign me up. I'm going to prove you wrong. And that's how I ended up joining the Marines over the other branches.
Did you get to pick the profession you wanted to get into or?
No. Yeah, I think if I remember correctly, my recruiter, Staff Sergeant Brown, he gave me like a couple of different options. And he was like, hey, there's no guarantee that you get any of these. I wanted to be an air crewman. Turns out my vision is absolutely terrible. So that did not work out. And I ended up in supply.
Okay. Where'd you do your basic training at?
Paris Island.
And then where'd you go from
Central? From there, I went to Camp Lejeune for MCT, Marine Corps Combat Training. After that, I went to Meridian, Mississippi for my supply school. And then after that, I was lucky enough to get stationed at Camp Pendleton in sunny Southern California.
Nice. How long did you stay down there until you got out?
So I actually got transferred back over to Johnson City here in Tennessee for about the last 6 months of my enlistment. They were getting ready to do some like pre-deployment training, and not a lot of guys in the unit had ever deployed before, really done anything like that, except a couple of the higher up guys. So they sent me over here, from what I was told, to just help them with their pre-deployment training. So I spent my last 6 months over here, 3rd Battalion, 24th Marines up here in Johnson City.
Nice. What was your time in the Marines like? Like, how did those moments, and did anything stand out to you as you're going through it that really stood out to you that has shaped like what you're doing today, you know?
I mean, probably too much stuff to even bring up. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about something I learned in the Marines and kind of use that in whatever situation I'm in. But if I'm looking at one thing that really, really stood out, it'd probably be when I was deployed. I've only had a couple situations like this in life where something takes place and you kind of have to stand up to the man, so to speak. So there were, as crazy as it sounds, it was like this big supply issue. There was a aircraft that had went down. They needed a part. It was about to be dusk, and there was a lot of regulations as far as flying at night and different things like that when we were in country. So I had a chief warrant officer. He came up to me and he's like, "Hey, I need you to get this to the other side of base. You've got about 15 minutes to do it." He said, "Don't stop for anybody. You just do what you got to do to get it there." And I'm in my little transport vehicle with MPs behind me on my way to where he told me to go to. And I'll never forget it, because the MPs were losing their mind, because to them, I'm just a guy who's not stopping, you know, like, because there's regulations on base about how fast you can drive and stuff like that. And I was breaking every single one of them. And once I got the part there, you know, the MPs were obviously unhappy. A major who, you know, outranks me, I was just a Lance Corporal at the time, he was there waiting on me to pick up the part, you know, that type of thing. And I remember him telling the MPs, you know, that this is a situation that had to be handled, that I was following orders to get that part to them as quickly as I could, you know, and kind of talked them down. But it kind of put it in my brain that there's situations every once in a while where you just got to put your head down and go, you know, and kind of, I guess, like the old saying goes, better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission, you know, that type of thing. And I've taken that to a certain extent in my life, you know, and then just brotherhood, man, in general. You know what I mean? One thing that I don't think the civilian realm really has that we have in the military is true brotherhood. You know, you can disagree with someone about anything and everything, but at the end of the day, they're your brother, you know, and I would have died for anybody in my unit to try to protect them. And I know they would have done the same for me, you know, and I try to use that mentality out here in the civilian world. Like the guys, the trainers and the coaches who work for me, I want them to know I've got your back. You know what I mean? And yeah, there may be a time we have to have a difficult conversation about one thing or another, but I've got your back. I want you to succeed in life as much as I want myself to succeed, you know, because I heard a quote and I think about this all the time, and it is, they won't care how much you know until they know how much you care, you know, and I really take that with me every day, because the thing that made the military so different for me is that you know that everybody on your left and your right's willing to do whatever they need to do for the person next to them, you know? And so honestly, that's probably the biggest thing I took from the military, is how important brotherhood and camaraderie really are.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. I talk about it all the time. Leadership is such an oversaturated term, because we throw it at absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Regardless, if you're in the military, you're in the civilian sector, you can say you have X position, so you're now in a leadership role.
Uh-huh.
You went to X school, so now you're a leadership, you know, guru, or you're in that, you understand what it means. And it can mean everything from I organize schedules, right, to I'm leading thousands of people,
yeah,
towards a goal. And like what I get out of what you said is, it's just doing the right thing. It's what I like to say is through action, not metrics.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
So if a part needs to get where it needs to go and somebody says it needs to get there, like, yes, you're following orders. Yes. You're, you know, you're getting something done that needs to get there for somebody else, but there's always a grander, there's always a larger picture. And the fact that when you got there and somebody stood up for you says a lot, because you can be in a leadership position or be a leader and it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean people are going to follow you. It doesn't mean that they're going to be there to help you. So I always ask people, like, what is it? What does it mean to you? So if I had to ask you, what would be your definition of leadership?
My definition of leadership would probably be caring about the people you're leading before you care about yourself. Because when you're in a leadership position, when you're in a role where you have to lead others, the best leaders I've ever had have always worried about the troops first and themselves second. And so that's probably the simplest definition I could give you, is just anybody can tell somebody what to do, right? Like, that's something everybody, when they're a kid, you know, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to be the boss, right? I'm going to tell people what to do. Leadership is so much more than that, right? Leadership, yeah, you may have to tell people what to do, but it's like, the way I try to lead is through example, right? So take something small like my gym, right? If the floors need to get mopped, I'm going to mop them, right? That's what I'm going to do. My trainers, my coaches are going to see me mopping the gym. I'm not too big for any job. Just because I may be in charge of A, B, and C does not mean I'm too big to work as a team player, right? And I've been in leadership roles before where somebody I was leading, right, maybe had an idea or maybe was brainstorming and come up with something that was better than what I had, right? A bad leader is going to deny that, is going to turn that down because they're not the one that came up with it, right? A good leader is going to say, hey, that's a phenomenal idea. Do you have any more like it? You know, and you're going to learn from that person. That's just going to make you a better leader.
Yeah, 1,000%. I use a saying all the time that everyone washes windows. I don't care who you are. It doesn't matter who you are.
Mm.
What I try and tell people is show people what leadership is like through inspiration. You know, go out there and mop the floor. Go out there and people may not say anything the first or second time, but when they see it over and over and you see it over time, right? Especially in the NBA. Hey, mm-hmm. that head coach mops his own floor and people know that, right? Yeah. Like, you're never too good. I'm out here with you. I'm going to put in the work just like you are, right? I want you to know that I'm just as part of this organization as you.
I mean, we're talking sports examples. After the World Series, Shohei Ohtani did not leave the dugout until he had cleaned up every piece of trash that was left out in the dugout, right? The greatest player to probably ever play the game of baseball still holds himself to a standard that other people don't want to meet. You know, and I think that the best leaders in the world, that's the mentality they have, right? And just like the story I was telling about getting the part, right? If that part had been for something I was working on, right, it's probably not that big of a deal. But all I knew at the time was that a bird had went down, and if we wanted to keep everybody as safe as possible, they had to get this over there so that bird could get back, right? At that point, I don't care if every MP in the world is behind me. I'm getting this part there because my brothers needed to be there, you know? And so, yeah, leadership is it's a fickle thing, you know, because everybody wants to be a leader, but not everybody wants the true responsibilities of what leadership brings.
1,000%, right? Yeah. 1,000%. I see it, and I'm sure you have too, and I see it all the time.
Uh-huh.
People want to have a say. They want to be able to do the thing, but without doing the basic tasks that are required of you to be in that leadership role. I need you to walk the windows. I need you to just do some basic things. Simplistic things is just don't, in the Army, I like to call it commanding through the inbox.
Uh-huh.
Send your emails, your messages, and hope people get back to you. Get out of your office. Get down into the rooms. Get down into the people. Work out with them and get to know them. If you got to stay late, that's part of your job. Like, I don't know, you know, if it's a surprise to you and you don't like it, just find somewhere else to go. And that's a hard pill for people to swallow. But if you don't want to put in the work, because at the end of the day, by you just mopping a floor and you showing people what right looks like and constantly communicating, being down there with them, those are the people that are going to interact with the individuals that come into that gym day in and day out. Those are going to be the face of your organization.
Yep.
And we've all been to the restaurant or where you go grab a bite to eat or a cup of coffee, right? At the face of the organization, you walk in there and you're like, what has happened to society or what is going on? And I immediately look around to that one or two people that are hustling while everyone else is sitting around. And I go, you know, if you were to just say something and lead through action, lead through inspiration, be like, I'm going to work hard and you just watch. I'm going to walk circles around you, you know, show you that everyone washes windows, that you probably make some organizational change, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so after, as you got ready to transition out of the Marine Corps, did you know what you wanted to do?
Not really, man. So I started training, even when I was training and like when I was stationed in Meridian, Mississippi, going through my supply school's training, I started lifting. I started getting a little bigger. I was working with some of my roommates and some of the people in my unit, trying to help them because they saw the progress I was making and they wanted to make similar progress. So that was kind of where I started. I was very lucky when I got to my unit at Miles 39 out in California. I had a staff sergeant, actually competed in the Mr. Olympia contest. His name's Xavius Gayton. He will forever be one of my heroes. Like, it was one of those. He was a staff sergeant. I was a PFC Lance Corporal. I kind of watched him from afar. He'd be in the gym and I'd be over there kind of watching to see what he was doing, that leading by example. And that was the first time I really kind of wanted to be a coach. You know, I watched him train. I watched him help people. And I was like, dude, I would love to do this, right? But that's kind of where the idea stopped. When I got out of the Marines, I was actually going to be a lawyer. That's what I thought that I wanted to do. So I went back into school, went into my legal studies program, worked on that. I interned at the Commonwealth Attorney's Office up in Virginia. So, I mean, I had some pretty good gigs, but it took one really twisted case to make me realize I didn't want to be an attorney. Dealing with a like child sex trafficking case, and I had to prep a witness, and I'll never forget prepping this witness, just hearing their story. I remember to the day, I remember thinking, I see why attorneys are alcoholics now. Like, I remember thinking that because listening to this young man's story about how he was physically and sexually abused by a police officer, no less, in my mind as a Marine, I was like, I can't do this. You know, because there's nothing going to stop me from coming across the table at somebody if I found out they've done this to a kid. You know, I lost my head. I lost my cool. And as an attorney, it's one thing you can't do. You know, you have to keep your head. You have to keep your wits about you. And I just realized real quick that's not the job I thought it was going to be, that I wasn't cut out for that. You know, so I worked a bunch of random jobs after that. You know, I finished my degree, got a 4.0, you know, which is crazy because I told you I was basically failing out of school before I joined the Marines, but you instill some discipline, you know, and different things like that, that I got in the Marines. And I was a stellar student after that. But I worked multiple different jobs. I worked from the dirtiest jobs, like cleaning vent hoods and Burger Kings and stuff like that. I worked retail sales for a little bit. And this whole time I was training people, you know, training my friends, training people that wanted help. But I never really thought of it as a career path until COVID hit. And when COVID hit, I remember I got laid off and I was just trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. Because at this point I was, Lord, I don't even know how old, probably 25 years old, like 24, 25 years old. And I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And I looked at all the people I had graduated high school with, some of the people I was in the Marines with, and they kind of had this air about them, like they knew exactly what their purpose was, you know, and I didn't have that. And I remember my wife one day, she said, you know, you love being in the gym. You love helping people. You love training. Why not just make that your job? And it worked. You know, I was like, hey, it's not a bad idea. I'll give it a shot, you know, which is all you can do in life is give something a shot, you know. So I ended up getting a job at like a small local gym, started training some adults and different things like that, you know, just basic fitness stuff. And the more I did it, the more I was like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do, you know. Damn the money, damn the rich and the fame and all that stuff. Like, this makes me feel like I have a real purpose, you know, close to what I felt like when I was in the Marines. One thing about being in the military is you have this purpose, you know, this grand purpose that's bigger than yourself, you know. And I felt like I got a little piece of that back when I started training. And I just never looked back, man. Like, went from that small little gym to now, you know, the biggest training facility in all of East Tennessee. I've got my own gym that's about to open up over here. So, I mean, it just, in 5 years, it went from 0 to 100.
So how did you get in? What was that coaching like? What type of stuff were you coaching them on? And like, how did you build that clientele base?
You talking about when I was in the Marines or afterwards?
No, I mean, yeah, afterwards. And even while you're in the Marines, you know, where you're like, hey, yo, I'm Andrew Kerr.
Basically, Yeah. So, I mean, in the Marines, it was pretty simple. You know, you go to the gym about every day. People see you in the gym. People saw me making progress. And then, you know, people that were in my unit, you know, people who I would just see at the gym, it started with just asking a question or two. And then it was, hey, you want to work out together? And then it was, hey, can you write me a program? You know, and it just kind of went from there. Once I got out, you know, the first gym I worked at, I was very lucky that I didn't really have to go look for clients. They were already there. I just had to kind of step in and coach them. But once I decided to start training on the athlete side and really get in with like some higher performing, you know, individuals, that's when, you know, marketing and, you know, branding and stuff like that became a lot bigger of a deal. So the Devil Dog Athletics, you know, kind of brand that I built, it just started out of nowhere, if I'm being totally honest with you. I can't take credit for like building this thing from the ground up. I just had an idea. I was like, okay, there's too many fitness influencers out there that are kind of full of crap. You know, there's too many influencers out there that I feel like are influencing the wrong thing. And I was like, I want to be able to give people advice, and I want to be able to give people training tips and to motivate people. But I want to do that in a positive way. I want to do that in a way that makes people stop and kind of look in the mirror and self-reflect on how they carry themselves, what type of person they actually want to be. Because I'm a big believer that the gym can totally change who you are, not just physically, but mentally as well. You learn a lot about yourself when you're in the gym. And so I just wanted to put positivity out into the world, right? With the stuff you see in the military, you know, whether you're special forces or whether you're admin, you see things and you deal with situations that affect you for the rest of your life, you know. And I wanted to find a way to take some positivity and put it out there for people that may need it. You know, like we talked about, just a kind word can really change somebody's outlook for that day, you know. And I thought, hey, if I can just post some inspirational stuff, some funny stuff, something that if somebody's having a bad day, they can come to my page and find something that's going to give them a little pick me up. That was all I wanted. And I figured if one or two people benefited from that, then that's a win for me. You know, then I've done what I set out to do. It seems like it was overnight. I had like 1,800 followers, and then I felt like I blinked my eyes and I was at 25,000, 30,000, you know, which, to a lot of people, that's nothing. You know what I mean? There's people with millions and millions of followers and all that. But for me, the number don't matter to me, right? That's half a stadium full of people that I could now affect. You know what I mean? That I can spread positivity to. And so, like, for me, social media and branding isn't necessarily about what can it get me. It's what can I give to other people, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, that is an amazing way to put it. One of the things we were talking about before was a balance isn't the best way to say it, but a harmony between all the aspects of your life, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, because they all affect one another. And if you can be in harmony between all those, you're going to have highs and lows with each attribute, if you will, of those. But physical, I would argue every individual is going to be different, but if I had to build a base, my base would be spiritual, then physical, then mental, then emotional. The gym has done absolute wonders for my life. It has come and it has been good and it's been bad, right? Like I've just come so addicted to going to the gym that if I'm on a plan and I miss a day, you know, it starts to drive me crazy, but it's the easiest outlet that we have out there, because in today's day of age, we're more connected than we've ever been, but we're more alone than we've ever been, because you can just be on your phone and just being outside, walking around, or just picking up some iron can just really, really changes your outlook. And I honestly love what you said about how the numbers don't matter. And I want to say congratulations, because 30,000 is a huge number. Like that is huge. Look at the size of cities. I mean, that's more than some cities that we have here. And I'm not saying you do, but you're right. There's a lot of people that'll take that for granted. Like, oh, well, it's not a million. Okay, well, it doesn't matter, man. Like that's 30,000 people that believe in what you're doing. That is super important, you know? And I do believe that we're in an age of time now that people really appreciate authenticity. You know, that, yeah, there's a lot of BS out there. There's a lot of trendy things. And as I'm learning, I'm losing a lot of followers. I've gained some, but our following isn't that big yet. But the people stuck around, or the feedback you get is they want it to be authentic.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm one of those people. I use social media as a tool, right? I'm one of those people, if you send me an Instagram message, I will respond, right? I've had people send me messages like, hey, this video was funny. I was having a terrible day. I really needed that. You're going to get a response from me. Hey, what's going on? Is there anything I could help with? Because you never know, right? 5 minutes of my time, and this is getting kind of heavy, but like being in the military, suicide is a humongous problem. Right. I've had multiple buddies that I was in with who have committed suicide. People I went to high school with have committed suicide. If 5 minutes of my time could pull somebody out of the pit, am I really not going to give 5 minutes of my time? Am I too big for that? You know? And so you never know what somebody's going through. Right. So I don't care who it is. I don't care what your problem is. Like, if somebody messages me, I'm going to respond. I'm going to do whatever I can to help you. I've had people just hit me up to ask me a fitness question. I'm going to respond to that, right? Because I feel like we've forgotten what our purpose is on this planet. We have totally forgotten that we are here to help each other. We are here to build each other up. We're here to show empathy towards each other, you know? And if I can do that, that's what I'm going to do, you know, and people can laugh at that or think it's pointless or think I'm wasting my time. Does not bother me in the slightest because I know what my intent. Yeah, it's my time. And I know what my intent with my time is. And that's to help other people.
Yeah. And sounds cliche, but everybody gets 24 hours in a day, man. And as long as you're happy at the end of the day, that's all that matters. And I like how you said that. I've said it so many times. I'm going to keep telling people this. There's so many people that will go to your Instagram page and say, he's got 30,000 followers. I'm not even going to try to engage with him because he's not going to get a hold of me. I hope one day to be like him. Dude, I have gotten, for every 1,000 no I've got an awesome yes.
Yeah.
I tagged Jason Kalipa in a post last week, and he wrote me and was like, hey, man, thanks. You know, and it's like the point I'm trying to make is we are all everyday people. You're a husband. You're a father. The follower count doesn't matter, man. It doesn't matter.
No, so, I think the follower count doesn't matter. What you do with that follower count does.
100%. Right?
Because I don't care if I've got 10 followers or 35,000 followers, right? I don't care if I get one message a day or 100 messages a day. My whole goal is to help people, to build people up, to motivate people. Hopefully as good as I was motivated and lifted up by my chain of command and by the people that was in my unit. And I think that's why this is so important to me, is because I was lucky enough that I did have people there to support me, that I did have a chain of command that genuinely cared about me and my well-being. And not everybody has that, right? Not everybody has parents who were alive, brothers and sisters. Not everybody has a family. So, I mean, you never know what a little bit of your kindness could do for somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, 1,000. And what, since you started to build this thing, how have things gone now to where you're starting to just operate your own gym?
We're going to find out. So it's one of those, I'm learning as I go, you know, been a coach. Now I have had to lead people before, you know, my time in the military definitely is helping me with having other coaches and other trainers kind of under my chain of command, so to speak. But as far as like the ins and outs of how to run this thing, I'm figuring out as I go. You know, I'm one of these people, I approach everything with the mentality that I may not know 100% of what I'm doing, but I know that I'm going to give 100% of my effort. I know that if I don't have the answer to something, I'm going to do everything I can to find it. And I know that I'm going to lead my gym or whatever it is I'm doing with honesty, with integrity, and with passion. And I feel like if you can say those three things, you'll be successful at whatever you do. right? Like leading with honesty and integrity, putting forth 100% effort, because as a coach, we always say the only thing you can control 100% of the time is your attitude and your effort. And I feel like anybody can be in a situation they're not 100% sure how to handle, but if you check off those three boxes, you're going to make it out the other side.
I'm writing that one down. It's a good one.
Oh, you're good, man.
What are people going to get when they come to your gym, and like, how can they find you? How many coaches do you have? What does like a typical program look like?
So right now I've got myself and two other coaches. We're looking to add to that here very soon. If you wanted to find me, the name of the gym is D1 Smoky Mountains. It's up here in Sevierville, Tennessee. If you're interested, anybody can just shoot me a message and I can give you, you know, all the information you need. We're in pre-sales right now. We have not officially opened the doors yet. So I don't have, you know, an Instagram page specifically for the gym yet. I don't have a website. Those things are going to come once we're officially open. But I am, you know, training at this facility, private training, team training, you know, things like that. So the easiest way would just be to shoot me a message and I can get you whatever information you need. But a typical program, I mean, you're going to come in, we're going to do an active stretch, mobility routine, that type of thing. And it really depends on what you're looking for. So I've got kids who come in for speed, agility, and quickness. That program is going to look totally different than a kid who comes in to put on 20 pounds for football. So it really just depends on exactly what the athlete, you know, needs in particular.
I'm sure you like a lot of them, but what is your favorite type of lifting and your favorite type of lifter to coach?
That's a tough one. My favorite type of lifting is going to be just like a general power lifting. Like I like picking up big, heavy weight. Like if I'm going to lift, that's what I'm going to do. My favorite lift in general is bench press. I'm preaching to the choir probably. Everybody's favorite lift is bench press. But
I don't know, man. Mine's deadlift has been mine for a long time. But
I had back surgery last year. I love a good deadlift. Deadlift would have been my answer about 2 years ago. But after the back surgery, I was just told I needed to lay off of it a little bit. So my squatting and my deadlifting have definitely taken a hit. I still do those lifts, but I've got to be real careful about how hard I try to push with those particular lifts. But yeah, bench press is my favorite lift just because now, I mean, it's the only lift I can really push myself on without having to worry about physical injury and stuff like that.
What's a personal best?
335.
All right. My deadlift is always, I've never been able to crack 500, man. I got 490. I'd always hit 490 and then I would go, cause you never go 95 anything.
No, you know, no, I mean? You go straight up. Yeah.
And never, dude, I for some reason, I mean, I haven't trained it and I've got a back injury now. So I honestly, I go to a trap bar deadlift now.
Yeah.
And work on a lot more speed. I say that if I went to a 10-year-old's birthday party this last weekend and tried playing kickball and did a grade 2 sprain to my hip flexor when I kicked the ball. So
nice.
You know.
Welcome. I was going to say welcome to getting older, man. Like yeah. I'm there too. Like because I'm training college kids and high school athletes, and every once in a while they'll get a little froggy and be like, "Hey coach, let's see you do it. Let's see you do something." You know what I mean? And I get down on the bench, I pray to God I don't hurt myself, and then I do whatever they're asking me to do.
What is your relationship like a lot, especially with those college students? Because they're in that weird phase that they graduated high school. I'm much like you, right? So I didn't go to college right out of high school. I mean, obviously you didn't spend that long there either. Went right into the military. So I didn't get that, you know, I had that, I thought I knew everything, but I wonder if I just went to college right after, if that would have amplified.
Yeah.
What is that relationship like? And do you do a lot of personal coaching with them? Like indirectly?
Yeah. No, 100%. And that's my favorite part about my job. I love coaching. Don't get me wrong. I love lifting weights. I love helping people learn how to safely do that. My favorite part of my job is connecting. Right, is connecting with the athletes. High school and college athletes are both kind of in, like you said, they're kind of in this weird boat where they're adults, but they're not adults you know, and some of the best memories I've got from coaching didn't come from lifting weights, right? It came from an athlete having a problem, trusting me enough to come to me in the office or wherever it is and explain their problem, and trusting me enough to get advice from me. Because I tell all my athletes, my goal is to make sure that you guys don't make any of the same mistakes that I make. Right. So perfect example, I'm not going to use his name, but there was an athlete who, college athlete, grades were not the best, and it was looking like that was going to affect him being able to stay in school and being able to stay playing the sport that he was playing. And I pulled him outside. Everybody else had tried talking to him. I pulled him outside and I was like, dude, you got to pull your head out of your ass. You know, like, pardon my French, but I was like, you are in this phenomenal position to be able to do what you love, to have it pay for your school, and to be able to come out the other side a better, a more mature person. And I was like, you're letting that slip away. And I told him about my time before going into the Marines, how I tried to go to college, and I was kind of in the same boat as he was. And I said that the best decision I ever made as far as that situation went was to pull myself out of the situation until I was prepared, you know? And so for him, I said, I don't know what that means for you. I don't know if that means that, hey, you got to buckle down and do this. I don't know if it means that we've got to build some more maturity, that we've got to get some more discipline. Whatever the case may be, we've got to find a way out of this situation or it's going to hurt you long term, you know? And I've had multiple situations like that where athletes have, you know, it's the whole thing as a parent. Your kids never want to listen to you as the parent, right? But by being a strength coach and by holding the position I hold, there's a lot of athletes that will come to me with problems, you know, and just giving them the best advice I could give them, trying to steer them in the right direction, but doing it in a way that I'm not, you know, wagging the finger at them, you know, because I remember being 20, 21 years old. The second somebody starts one of these numbers, you kind of tune it out, you know? And so, yeah, that's my favorite part of my job is being able to help people with stuff bigger than the weight room, you know?
How many athletes do you think you're going to see, or do you typically see in a year?
In a year? Oh, Lord. I'd say I train, like, tomorrow I'll probably train 100, like, with all the different teams and stuff that I train. Yeah. So in a year?
A lot.
A lot. Yeah. I'm sitting here trying to do the math. A lot. Upwards of 2,500 probably.
What are your days like? And then what do you take out of your day to take care of you? You know, when we go back to that harmony of spiritual, physical, mental, emotional fitness, where do you fit that into your life every day to make sure you can be selfless for the rest of the day?
See, and this is something, I mean, I'll just be honest, that I need to work on, right? I stay so focused on my job and on helping these athletes and trying to help my kids and trying to do that type of stuff that I have to work on me taking time for me. You know, I spoke in front of a class a couple of weeks ago over at Johnson University, and one of the students asked me almost the same question. He said, you know, how do you find time for you? Because I get up, my day starts at about 6 a.m. and it's not over till about 8 p.m. And I'm pretty much going the whole time, whether it's sales, administrative stuff, coaching, traveling, you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, I'm moving 14 hours a day. So it's a busy day. It's a busy schedule. I've got to do better at making time for me, because there are definitely days where trying to be selfless throughout the entire day, it's exhausting. You know, yesterday was one of those days where I got home and I was just totally spent. Like, I had nothing left in the tank, you know? But again, I go back into my head and I think, hey, I'm blessed enough to have everything that I have. I'm blessed enough to have a good job. I'm blessed enough to have a great family, a wife who loves me. All those blessings I've got, not everyone else has, right? So as crazy as it sounds, I'm okay with being physically and emotionally exhausted if it means I can help somebody else, right? Yeah, and then when the weekend hits, that's when I try to recharge. That's when I kind of turn everything off. I'm not on social media as much, and I try to give myself some self-care over the weekends.
How I 100% am with you in that. And I have fallen short many of times being able to take care of my family, right? And not take care of them, but be them, be there for them.
Yeah.
You know, because I go all in with everything I do. And I think inherently a lot of us do that. So I wanted to ask you a question of how do you, and this is something I have personally gotten better with this last year because of how busy things have been and how much I've finally been able to take a step back and realize that while I get so much joy, because it is, it's a very selfish feeling about how much joy you get from helping people.
Yeah.
But as I took a step back this year, I looked at it and I said, cool, at what cost? And one thing I've gotten better about is saving more of that emotional piece for my wife. And I wanted to ask you, how do you balance that? Because especially as a dad, right? Like you get home, the kids want your attention. You know, we tend to forget it because we say, hey, we got to make sure we got time for the kids. We got this, we got that. When, man, your wife was here before all that. She's been on the journey with you. And we tend to get lost in what we're doing. I got to pour back. I love the saying, don't forget to date your wife. And I'm like,
yeah,
that up there. So I just wanted to ask, like, how do you balance that part?
Again, something I need to work on. Like, I feel like anybody who is going to be honest with themselves has to be honest 100% of the time, right? So just because I'm on here, I'm not going to pretend to be the perfect husband because I'm definitely not, right? I know how to add weight to somebody. I know how to make somebody faster. I know how to do all of those things, right? When you're dealing with like your significant other, like my wife, you know, I don't always know the right thing to do like I do when I'm in the gym. And I'm okay admitting that, you know, I do the best I can, but there's definitely days where I probably fall short of being able to give her what she needs. And that's something that I'm just continuously working on. You know, I catch myself, you know, maybe not doing what I'm supposed to be doing or not giving her the attention that she deserves. And I try to look myself in the mirror and have that conversation when I catch myself and be like, okay, how can we get better at this? Right? Because I don't care how rich you are. I don't care what your job is. None of us have it all figured out. We're all just trying to figure it out while we're down here, you know? So that's that and the time for myself are probably the two areas I need to work on the most. So, I mean, with your kids, it's a little bit easier. Pick them up, throw them around, do some crazy stuff. They're going to think it's hilarious. They're going to have a great time, you know? If I try to pick my wife up and throw her around, she'll beat the crap out of us both. You know what I mean? So I can't, the same thing don't work there. But I mean, we have talks a lot of the time, you know, me and her will have talks about maybe an area that I could get better at. And I think that part of being, you know, a grown man is being able to have your wife or have somebody say, hey, you know, this is an area I think you're lacking in. And rather than getting defensive or getting upset about that, really look in the mirror and think, okay, why would they say that? Why would they think that? What, again, leading with actions, right? What actions can I take to show this person that I've got them on the forefront of my mind, you know?
Yeah, I've got five pillars that we go with at Beyond the Trek that when we talk to people about, and that's attitude. Right. Most things, you said it already, right? You can control your attitude. Most outlooks can be completely changed if you just have a positive attitude when you go into it.
Yep.
The second one being be the change you wish to see, right? Which you've hit on already, right? Growing up, having that different outlook on things. Number three is try and have fun every day. Find something every day to have fun. Right. Fourth one is do something hard every day. And the last one is be the leader. And they sound so cliche, man, but be the leader you would follow. And yeah. the discussion you talk about with your wife is the same one I have with mine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still times, right? Being honest about it, you get mad, right? At least I do. You get, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm doing all these things. But you go back and you do a little bit of that self-reflection. You say, I am your spouse, but if I was in your shoes and I was doing the things I'm doing right now, would I want to be around you? And the answer is typically, for me, it's no. Like, no, I wouldn't want to be around you because you have this going on, and I'm asking for this. And so it is. It's so great that you can say that. And like, even when you talk to your athletes, man, that's one thing I've had a hard time with younger athletes and crowds is saying, hey, be that leader that you would follow. And it sounds cliche. Oh, well, yeah. And I'm like, well, think about it, man. Like, your current state emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, financially, like, do you want to be your own friend? Do you want to be your own spouse? Do you want to be your own neighbor? The answer is no. Like, I don't need to tell you what you got to work on. Like, you already know.
That's it. You're
saying, you know.
And I don't think that's cliche at all. I think that's just hitting the nail on the head, right? Everybody's had a boss that was terrible. Everybody's had somebody they had to follow, not wanted to follow, you know? And I hope that most people are lucky enough to have had someone that they wanted to follow. And then when you look at the difference between those two, I've had people in my chain of command that I would have saved them, but I would have probably had to think about it twice, you know? And then I've had other people that's like, hell or high water, I've got your back. You know what I mean? Because you've got mine. You know, and that's the way family should be too, you know, and that's one thing that I have told my wife and I've told my kids even is even when it seems like I'm checked out, even when I'm thinking about work, even when I maybe have too much on my plate and I don't have the wherewithal to ask for help, I would still go to hell and back for you. You know what I mean? Like, I would still lay my life down on the line for you or your sister, your mom, you know, whoever it is. And none of us are going to be perfect in the way that we act, right? We're always going to make mistakes, but I feel like people need to hear just as much as they need to see, you know?
Yeah, 1,000%, man. Well, when is your new gym opening up? When everybody, I know you're doing pre-sales right now, but when is it opening up? Everybody
we're
come
doing, we're doing pre-sales right now. Hopefully next 30 days. We got a few more things to do on the interior till we get everything totally done. But in the next 30 days, we're hoping to have them doors open.
So hopefully by January 2026, we're in the full swing.
That's it. Which, great time for a gym to open. All the people are going to be wanting to get that New Year's resolution in, you know, so.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, one final question I wanted to be able to ask you here is, if you could go back and do anything differently, what would you do and why?
Lord, if I could go back and do anything differently, I would have listened to my gut. When I realized I wanted to be a coach, when I was in the Marines and I started training people and I got that feeling that, you know how sometimes you get an inexplicable feeling that you're just doing the right thing? And you don't really know where it comes from, but you just get this feeling like, hey, this is what I'm meant to do. I had that feeling and I didn't listen to it because I was too concerned with making a bunch of money. Lawyers make money, trainers don't, you know? And if I had it to do over, I would have listened to my gut and I would have started coaching immediately. I would have made that my career, my entire adult life, and quit worrying about the money, because some of the richest people in the world are the most miserable people in the world, right? Like, having a purpose is bigger than having a big bank account, you know? And I wish I would have realized that a lot younger, you know, that it's not just about making all the money in the world. Having a family, having a purpose, you know, those things are more important. I would much rather, as my kids get older, I would much rather them say, hey, my dad helps people, than to say, hey, my dad's rich. So it's like a relative term.
It is. And I think it's convoluted these days because, you know, you see a lot of people that say they're rich, but to your point, rich in what, you know?
Yeah.
Rich in love, rich in faith, rich in, you know, just.
Yeah.
Money only gets you so far. I love music. Music is big to me, especially country music. I love when they say they've never seen a hearse. Or they never seen a moving trailer behind a hearse.
You know? Nope. That's it, man. And I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is it's not bad to make money, right? I'm not saying that it is. I'm not saying that if somebody's well off that they're not as good of a person, right? But as a Christian, the Bible does say it's you know, easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich person to get into heaven. you know. And I really think that's because money and wealth, it does something to you if you're not prepared for it, you know. So I've always told people, and people think I'm crazy, but if I was to win the lottery tomorrow, right? Yes, I'm going to take care of my family, but I'm going to give a lot of that money away. I really am. And I've got no issue with saying that, right? Because yes, while I need to take care of my family and different things like that, there's too many people that are out there hurting, you know, like right now, what we have going on, people, you know, not getting food stamps, not being able to eat, you know, everything we got going on in this country. It's like, there's too many people out there that have the ability to help that just choose not to. And if I was to come into money, I'm not going to be one of those people. You know, I think we have a responsibility to help each other and to hear each other and to try to build each other up whenever we can.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, man. 100%. Well, I wanted to say, hey, thank you. Thanks for taking time, man. I want to turn everybody over to check out Andrew Kerr. Go on. He's on Instagram. You can find him on there. You can send him a message. Like you said, check out the new gym that'll be opening, fully open, hopefully, by January 2026. Let's get you a membership, get you a plan, and I got to get you some swag sent out there, too, so you can get it hung up out there.
Yeah, man. I'm all about it.
Heck yeah. All right. Well, hey, thanks, man. I appreciate your time.
Hey, not a problem.